Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Good morning and welcome to episode 81 of the Jaguar Report podcast. My name is Gus Logue, joined by my co-host John Shipley. John, appreciate you filling in last week previewing the Bucks game. I'm happy to be joining you right now, even though I feel like there's going to be less for the two of us to talk about.
The good morning just doesn't hit the same when I want you to know that it very much felt like I was being a fraud. And I will say, while you were gone, I took, you know, your torch of proclaiming a Calvin Ridley week.
Oh,
locked in two touchdowns. There we go. We had maybe I'm the key to Calvin Ridley's production success. Every time you say it's a really weak, he produces like Parker Washington. So maybe I should be the one who, you know, starts hyping him up a little bit. But it's good to have. It's good to have you back, buddy. Not going to lie, talking to myself for 30 minutes, I could probably do it for a few hours, but not sure how entertaining that is for others. So glad to have you back.
It's good to be back. Yeah, I guess I don't even know if we have a lot to talk about or a little bit to talk about. But I was telling you before this that I was going back to watch the game and I stopped in the second quarter. I was like, why even bother? Just everything was bad. The secondary, the D-line, the O-line, the receivers, the quarterback even, the play calling. The tackling, the communication, the special teams, defense, everything. It was just brutal all the way around, it felt like. I don't even know where to
begin. It was a 30-12 loss to a 7-7 team, and it was still worse than that score says. It was like 30-0 before, you know, the Buccaneers basically like, all right, you guys can do whatever you want. Like the Buccaneers like looked like just from – I wasn't at the game. I know some people were like, they were surprised more media wasn't down there. It's Christmas Eve. Get real. I'm not going. Get real. But you could see, like, on the broadcast, like, the Buccaneers, like, basically looked like they thought they had that game won in the first half, which, I mean, they did. You know,
they weren't wrong.
Just start off with this. Was that the worst game of the Doug Peterson era to you? I think it is. And I think that's like the fourth different game this year that you can classify that as. I think the Houston game in week three, because Houston was so severely depleted and then the offense was terrible, the defense was terrible, and special teams was terrible. I think the 49ers and what was it, week 10, just because you got completely steamrolled. Like, I know the 49ers are the NFL's second best team right now, but still. Yeah. I'd say the Cleveland game was honestly up there because it took like some garbage time and some like lucky turnovers to even make that like a semi close game. But they just got dog walked by Cleveland's offense and then they turned it over four times. I think this game was worse than any of those. You know, when you factor in the opponent, I think it was worse than last year's Lions game. I thought this was the worst game of Doug Peterson era. There is nothing positive I can say other than Tyler Lacy made two nice tackles in the run game and Elijah Cooks had a good drive. Other than that, and Anton Harrison allowed zero pressures. I thought on rewatch, Anton Harrison was fantastic. He's legitimately their best offensive lineman, you know, right now for the season, I'd say. So other than those three, like, very minor positives,
right?
I don't think there's anything nice you can say about this game.
Yeah, I was also thinking about both the primetime losses, the Bengals game and the Ravens game were both pretty disappointing just because there was so much excitement about being on Monday and Sunday night football just to fall completely flat. And, like, the thing about every single one of these losses this season is that it's, like, the same issues, is that the Jags beat themselves, not the they just lose to a better team. Like, that kind of sort of happened week 10, but week 10 was really a case of both instances. And so, like, it's been frustrating to listen to Doug, like, at the mic week after week, kind of saying the same stuff, because every time it's just them shooting themselves in the foot. It was, like, sort of funny to talk about in weeks 1 and 2, but you kind of figured that things would turn around by the end of the season, and that's just the opposite of what's happened. They're 8-7 right now, and they were 8-7 at this time last year, and then they're just going in complete opposite directions.
Were they really 8-7 at this time last year?
I saw a tweet saying that, so if I'm wrong, I wasn't wrong.
That's insane. I want to say they were 7-8 this time last year because they won their last two games. You know, they beat the Texans and the Titans, so I think that is partially wrong, but still, nonetheless, you started off 6-2. You start off 8-3, and you're now 8-7. I'm not sure there's a team playing worse football over the last month than the Jaguars. Like, what have they done well over the last month? I thought Lawrence was fantastic against the Bengals, but outside of that, like, they keep turning the ball over. They are tied with the Jets for the most turnovers in the last month. They're not creating turnovers. They have one of the worst turnover differentials in that time. They are one of the worst teams at fumbling the ball. They've fumbled the ball 9 times over the last 4 games. They haven't lost all of those, but just fumbling the ball that much is absolutely insane. And Trevor's throwing interceptions at a high clip. And the thing is, I think Doug said today, both the interceptions from the Tampa Bay game were like receivers and the quarterback again not being like on the same page for the call play at all. You go back to what? 2 interceptions against the Browns being like that, and that's 4. Parker Washington not running the right route, and Trevor getting hurt, that's another like similar type play. Like, those things just keep popping up, and that's what I think is most concerning for them, is they're executing poorly, because like I think Press Taylor's done a bad job this year. You know, like I especially over this last month. Yeah, I know that's your guy. I'm sorry.
My guy, you keep coming back like every other episode and being like, I think Press Taylor caught an okay game. I mean, granted, the last time he did that was over a month ago. It
wasn't yeah.
Like you've said a couple of different times, like in specific spots this season, that he's done a good job. And like, I've probably agreed with you. So I'm in the wrong too. But
I think there have been – my issue is I don't think like people can 100% say – you know, like Press Taylor, like he's a witch, you know, like it's him, like it's all Press Taylor, you know. I think he's okay, a huge yeah. part of it, but I also think one, they just look, I think when they look as poorly coached as they have over the last month, I think that has to go to the coaching staff and both the players, but I mean, especially the coaching staff. I don't think like Doug Peterson, like he doesn't have a magic wand. Like if Doug Peterson took back the play calling from Press Taylor, I'm not sure how much of a difference that would make, because it's not like he's not super heavily involved anyways. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I do think a lot of it is like their actual like execution and stuff. Like, I don't think Press is the one out there turning the ball over as often as he is, but I do think Press is the one who, you know, obviously being put in bad situations as an offense. And you saw that against Tampa Bay. The running backs had what, like 7 combined carries, I think?
Definitely less than 10.
I don't know if they had a designed run in the second half. And I get it. You're down 20-0. But that game was, what, 3-0 at one point? 10-0 at one point? 13-0 at one point?
Yeah, they were doing okay on the ground until the Dearness, like, messed up handoff. And then at that point, they just abandoned it.
And that's my thing. And that's something which – you know, I've heard too from, you know, outside of this podcast, like, you know, people like inside that you need to at least attempt to run the ball. Even if you can't run the ball, you have to attempt to run it. Because if you're just trying to drop back 50 times a game, you're going to get absolutely tee off against. I think that's part of the reason why Lawrence has been like, I don't know, somebody has a voodoo doll of him or something, and every different game, there's like a different part of his body. I think that's part of it. I think with this offensive line, you can't ask them to pass pro that much against really any defensive front. So, if you want to like point the fingers for why this game went off the rails. I think you need like a couple different hands to be able to point enough fingers at. But I think when you want to talk about the offensive coordinator issue, that to me has been the big issue, is that it doesn't look like they want to run the ball. It doesn't look like they can run the ball. And honestly, it doesn't look like they know how to run the ball. Like, I don't think they have a good running scheme. I haven't felt like that all year. I felt like they had a better one last year. Yeah. And I think that's a huge part of it. And I also, I don't know. It, to me, what this game settled in is that their offseason was officially, regardless of if they go in these next two games and like win by like 30 points each game and they go into the playoffs on fire, etc. Even if that happens, it won't. Even if that happens, their offseason strategy was still an undebatable failure, in my opinion. It was every general manager, in my opinion, in the NFL is arrogant. I think you probably have to be arrogant to do that job. The Jaguars had one of the most arrogant offseasons I can remember of any team in the last couple of years. They went 9-8 with a couple of miracle wins. They needed a controversial Josh Dobbs, like fumble, non-fumble, to even get them into the playoffs. And they said, this is actually good. You know, like, this is fine. This doesn't need to be upgraded. Brenton Strange and Tank Bigsby, I don't think it's hyperbolic. As things stand today, are the worst tight end and running back selections of this current decade. Considering where they were picked. Brenton Strange is like 47th out of 52 rookie tight ends in yards per route ran over the last 3 or 4 years. And all the guys below him, or it's like 2 third-round picks who were like Hunter Long and Trey McKitty, obviously awful players from the jump. They're on second teams. 5th-round pick, and then like 4 or 5 undrafted free agents. Strange was a 2nd-round pick. Tank Bigsby has 6 snaps over the last 5 weeks, and he was a 3rd-round pick. Like, I'm not going to be gaslit into people saying, well, who would you have picked? No. I said these are stupid picks at the time. A lot of people said they were stupid picks at the time, and I don't put it at all on the players. I don't think Tank's a bad pick because he's a bad player. You know,
right.
You can debate that all you want. I don't think Strange was a bad pick because he's a bad player. It's a bad pick because the idea that they thought that they were good enough to take a third string tight end and a backup running back in the top 100 this year is so asinine. Like, I'm working myself up now because I don't care about whether the Jaguars win or lose at all. Like, from like in my job, I literally couldn't care less if they went 0-17. But when I'm being gaslit into people telling me, no, you're crazy, no, you're wrong, that's when I get worked up a bit. And that's what I feel about their offseason. As I'm sorry, I was being told a million different directions, whether it's from fan base, whether it's from like team itself. Like, no, like, you guys are wrong. These are actually good picks. We don't draft for now. We draft for 5 years down the road or whatever. No, you can draft for now. You can draft for now. There are playoff teams who are getting contributions from their rookie class. Well, before last week, one of the Ravens' most impactful offensive players was an undrafted rookie. Like, come on. I'm up to that again.
Even like a team that's like coming off a Super Bowl appearance, like the Chiefs or the Eagles, like if they drafted like a backup tight end and a backup running back in the 2nd round, like people should still be furious at that. Like, even if they're like saying, our roster right now is fine and we can kind of like go after these positions, then like, no, like you got to stay aggressive and keep picking premium positions. Like, the Chiefs have been taking a lot of corners and edges in the 1st round, and then the Eagles are doing their thing, taking a lot of trench players in the 1st round. And like, I mean, you gotta be more aggressive. And I feel like we've both been saying that like since April, is that like this team has like the bones to be able to make it through the regular season. At this point they haven't, but like neither of us were confident they were going to do anything past the 1st round in the playoffs, because like it was just like a false dream last year's events of like the late season run, where like, yeah, it was great, but that doesn't make you a Super Bowl contender for this year. And like, going back to the Bucs game a little bit, I feel like both coordinators and the quarterback are kind of being forced to press to like make up for the lack of depth around them, because like the Jaguars have definitely been stricken by the injury bug this year.
Sure. But
that happens to every team. And so like, you need guys to step up. And like, it's one thing when like no one steps up to like make a lot of plays and be like a Pro Bowl caliber player, but it's another thing when like there's no one stepping up at the bottom of the roster too, to just like make you a capable team to like win games late in the season. And so like, I feel like not that it like removes blame from the coordinators or the quarterback, but I feel like they're kind of like being forced into mistakes because they feel like they have to like carry more weight on their shoulders. And like, but I agree with you in general where like it all kind of like goes back to like the way the roster was constructed in the past year or we got ball of construction.
Everybody got bulky ball. That to me, like if you told me point one finger at who was responsible for this season, it's going up top, man. The architect that to me is like you hit the nail on the head. To me, it's a talent issue. You know, like when I know they have injuries at wide receiver. Not a lot of teams can sustain injuries to two starting wide receivers. But I mean, just simply looking at the Jaguars staff, they could have used a backup receiver more, and they could have used Brenton Strange. And I feel like now people can finally stop taking victory laps on. Like Parker Washington, like he seems like a okay-ish 6th round pick, you know. But like I saw, I think it was from the podcast BCP Couch, who was like, some teams draft Puka Nacua on day 3, some teams draft Parker Washington, and people gave him hell, and they're like, no, Parker's been good. Like, no, like there are levels to this, you know. Exactly. Like, and that, you know, just to me sums up where everything's gone wrong this season was just the overconfidence, arrogance, ignorance, you know, in terms of team building. And now you're seeing it bleed into, because I do think when you watch Lawrence play, I do think you're seeing a quarterback who's pressing. Like, yeah, he's obviously making mistakes. I had some people telling me they thought Sunday was the worst game he's ever played. I disagree with that. I'm like, tell me, I want anybody like tell me if that's the case. Tell me his 3 worst plays. And you're going to say 2 interceptions and the fumble. Well, 2 interceptions, miscommunications, and the fumble. Should have got rid of the ball, you know, when, like, you obviously know they're bringing more people than you have to protect. But I'm still – it's hard for me to kill a quarterback too much when they fumbled the ball, when they're just overwhelmed from a pressure and a blitz standpoint. I thought he's had, like, a dozen games worse than the one he had on Sunday. But you can tell watching him, he's clearly pressing. I mean – the way he got hurt was the perfect example of it. He dived out of bounds when it was 30-0 at the end of the 3rd quarter and ended up hurting himself. Like that to me is a Jaguars like season and Trevor Lawrence in a nutshell. So he's definitely not playing good football. He has what, 8 turnovers in the last 3 games, I'd say. He had,
sounds right,
3 against Cleveland, 2 against Baltimore, and then 3 against Tampa Bay. So 8 turnovers in 3 weeks. I'm not gonna excuse that. Obviously, but I do think that there's levels to it and, you know, really, you know, other areas of blame to go to. I'm not interested at all in any long-term conversations about Trevor Lawrence, because I think you can see as a whole, the offense just simply is not good. They can't run the ball. They can't block. They're clearly not well coached at wide receiver right now. I don't know what positives you can say about the offense. And did you watch any of when C.J. Beathard came in?
Barely. I was just kind of like writing at that point. I watched the first 2 passes, but then when Engram fumbled that one, I basically checked out.
I've seen takes that people saying the offense moved better when C.J. went in. And even if you ignore the context of it was like 30-6, I just want to shake them, Gus. I'm like, what were you watching? Do you think that offense moved better? Like, was I the only one who saw him try to gift an interception to Evan McPherson or whatever the hell that dude's name is?
Evan McPherson.
Was that? That's not his name, is it?
That's McCollum. The Kingos kicker. Oh, I don't God. Even know who you're talking about.
God, you know who I'm McCollum. Something like that. It was one of the worst passes. It's the worst pass the Jaguars quarterback has thrown this year. So when I see people say that stuff, I'm not going to engage in too many Trevor arguments with the fan base, because I get it. Fan is short for fanatic. You're hurt. You want somebody to blame. I understand. Just rest your head right here. Go ahead. Let it all out. I'll tell you how you're wrong later, but go ahead and let it out. I'm not going to be the guy who says, no, Trevor Lawrence is actually playing well right now. But I will be the guy who says Trevor Lawrence is far and away their best player on offense, even in this current skid. And the issues go so far beyond him. And Like I thought this game was a perfect microism of their issues as a team. You know, they just they don't have the horses. And I think that goes, you know, right up to the very tippy top.
Yeah, no, that's a good way to sum it up, honestly, is they just don't have the horses. But we're like nowhere close to having conversations based on like, is Trevor Lawrence losing the Jaguars games? Like, that's like not even close to the case at all. He's part of the losing because obviously, as you're saying, the turnovers aren't helping. But like, he's nowhere close to being, I don't know, the main
factor. Like context is needed for turnovers. You know, like the Buccaneers what scored a touchdown, I think, on all three of his turnovers on Sunday. So when you look at it that way, yeah, them turning the ball over is losing them games. I don't think Trevor alone is. It's not like they're not like Zach Wilson interceptions where you're like, okay, where the hell was that actually supposed to go to? Like, you can tell watching the games that something was off. You could tell when Parker Washington and Calvin Ridley were standing right next to each other on that first interception that somebody did something wrong. And you could tell after the Evan Engram interception that something was wrong. That's where I disagree with people is I'm not trying to say like, oh, Trevor's playing well. It's just you need to add context. And you can say turnovers are killing the offense. I don't think Trevor Lawrence is killing the offense. I'd honestly think it would do a lot of people good to see C.J. Beathard start a full game for the Jaguars. Then you can really like see what kind of difference it makes because I think it'd be a big one. Like if you put an average quarterback on this Jaguars team, they're a 5-win, 6-win team in my opinion. They're picking the top six.
I mean, I feel like Jags fans shouldn't even need to watch C.J. Beathard. We just watched Gardner Minshew, Blake Bortles, et cetera, all these just brutal quarterbacks. And then, like, just got to use your eyes. Don't watch the box score. Like, I don't really even know what else to say.
They don't watch.
I don't even know what else to say about this game. Like,
yeah. I mean, it was a very pointless, like, game. Like I said, you could tell it was over after the first quarter. You know, like that just wasn't the game they were going to win, which I don't know. We'll talk about the Panthers like on Friday, but it's just, it feels like a lifeless team right now. I think, like I said, I put most of the blame on how they constructed the roster this offseason. And I tell me, they didn't do nothing. Okay. They added Calvin Ridley. Is Calvin Ridley the difference between a 9-8 team and going to the Super Bowl? I don't think so. They changed kickers and they changed right tackles. That's it. What else did they actually do this offseason? That, to me, is why they lose games like this. So that's really all I have to, you know, say on the offense. Like I thought Elijah Cooks had a nice drive. I'm pretty positive that 23-yard catch he had wasn't even intended for him, but it was also
the deep dig route?
Yeah. Was it meant to go to him or Parker?
I feel like there was no one else in the area from what I remember.
Parker was right there.
Was Parker running the clear out route? Because I thought it was a pretty obvious.
It looked like Parker was sitting.
I don't know. I'd have to watch it again. But
they were incredibly close to each other, which has kind of been a theme lately. So right. I guess that's one take. Elijah Cooks had a good game. Anton Harrison, zero pressures allowed, and then his backup allowed four pressures in like a quarter and a half. So it's very clear how important Anton is.
Mm-hmm.
Britton Strange and Tank Bigsby combined for 11 snaps and zero touches. Home run selections there.
Josh Allen had a nice game. He was against Tristan Wirfs for every snap, and Wirfs had like maybe like his worst or second worst game of the season. Three or four pressures to Allen. So Allen continued to be kind of like a one-man show on the other side. I thought it was interesting that like Elijah Cooks had that one really nice drive where he had three catches and two first downs. And then I feel like he didn't play again after that.
Yeah, it's not like he wasn't targeted again after that. I'm pretty sure I'd love to see how many snaps he played in the second half because I'm not sure.
I think I saw something earlier that said he's had 9 snaps the whole game. And I feel like that was all on one drive.
He had, I think, 14 and he ran 9 routes. So he had like 4.22 yards per catch, and they had 4 different pass catchers have less than a yard. I mean, no, 4.22 yards per route, and they had four different pass catchers, Etienne, Jones, Washington, and Agnew, all have under 1 yard per route ran. So it, very clearly, like, those four weren't offering anything, you know, in the passing game. Etienne, I think you can excuse a little bit because running backs run so many check down routes and stuff that they're not even looked at on. But, like, Jones, Washington, and Agnew were just, like, NPCs for the game. So, yeah. Gus, you got anything else on the offense for us, buddy?
No.
Okay. We'll be right back over to defense.
Okay.
All right, Gus. Now the defense. It. Oh, how they have fallen. Man, they pour one out. Pour one out for the Mike Caldwell masterclass. I can confidently say I don't think the Jaguars have to worry about replacing him in the offseason anymore. But, man, it is wild to me that a defense can look so competent against a top five player in the NFL and Lamar Jackson a week previously. And then the next week going against a quick game merchant in Baker Mayfield, and he just absolutely completely shreds them. Like it was that kind of game for me because they had the defense healthy too. Andre Sisco was in, Tyson Campbell was back, Devon Hamilton and Foley Fatakasi played. They had all of their players, but Baker 26 for 35, 283 yards, and two touchdown passes. He just diced them up. This defense looks like the defense I think people expected them to be coming into the season. Like, I think I predicted before the season that they'd have a bottom five pass defense. They looked incredible in the first half of the season as a pass defense. Now they just look lifeless. They're not contesting anything. They're struggling a lot against screens, and it seems like offenses kind of are keying in on that. Like, first play of the game was like a 9 yard gain on a screen because it was obvious Antonio Johnson was blitzing.
Mm-hmm.
Tyson Campbell gave up two touchdowns, including one where he just got absolutely bullied by Mike Evans in the end zone. Andre Sisco hasn't really made a play since injury started with him in week 7 against New Orleans. It feels like the defense is just a complete shell of what we saw in the first half. And then per PFF, they had the second most missed tackles of the Peterson-Mike Caldwell era on Sunday with 15. 15 missed tackles in an NFL game is insane. Yeah. They somehow had 17 in that 10-6 loss to Houston in week 5 last year. Houston scored one touchdown. How do you miss 17 tackles that game? But they missed 15 this game. And several of those were along the defensive line. But even on the first drive, you know, they get a chance to get off the field on third down. Foye Oluokun misses a tackle in the middle of the field and guy gains 15 yards. That just to me sums up what this defense looks like right now.
Yeah, I don't even know where to assign the blame for this because it feels like each unit, the defensive line, linebackers and secondary have just regressed since the start of the season. Certainly injuries have played a part, especially in the secondary. Like you said that the Jags went into the game healthy, but obviously Tyson Campbell has not really been healthy all season. And then that was pretty apparent on Sunday. And then I think you can say that Sisco and then clearly Devon Hamilton aren't where they would ideally be. I feel like Ham honestly got outplayed by Gotsis and Roy Robertson Harris on Sunday. And Trayvon had a sack, but was
I wish we could play that sack back. Yeah, I put out the pressure stuff from PFF and for the record, that Arden Key is 46th and 43rd, in that range for all of these stats. In pressures, Josh Allen, among 123 players, is fourth. In pressures, sixth in win rate. Great season. Trayvon Walker, 81st in win rate. Caleb Von Chason, 99th in win rate. DeJuan Smoot, 114th in win rate. And if you're even thinking, maybe that's skewed a little bit, let's look at true pass sets. You take out the gimmicky, non-real stuff like RPOs and screens. Josh Allen, second in win rate. Trayvon, 70th. Chason, 85th. Smoot, 110th. Nobody wins up front other than Josh Allen. Like
yeah, when you were talking about the arrogant general managing earlier, I just kept thinking about like how Balky was saying, like, oh yeah, Smoot and Devon Hamilton are gonna be our pass rush. Like, we're comfortable with those two. Like, come on now. Yeah. We knew that was ridiculous at the time, but like it's even more ridiculous now that neither of them have done much at all.
I firmly believe they saw Arden Key had 4.5 sacks last year and thought we won't really miss that. And that's not to say Arden Key is Lawrence Taylor or anything like that, but you couldn't find room for Arden Key on this pass rush rotation.
Even if they like kept Arden Key, like you still got to keep going. Like, do you remember the name Yasir Abdullah? Like, I just remembered it a couple hours ago.
I remember I remember his much better teammate who the Buccaneers drafted.
That's why I thought of him.
I'm convinced when they drafted Abdullah, people thought they were drafting that guy. I'm so excited.
Definitely. They're like, oh, yeah, that small Louisville edge, golden.
Perfect. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, Diaby. What a home run of a pick from the Buccaneers, which goes to show, like, just nobody wins up front for the Jaguars. And if I wasn't getting so gaslit by the Strange and Tank thing earlier this year, I'd be furious at getting gaslit over the Trayvon discourse. I think he's gotten better, but get real, people. Come on. Get real. He has more sacks than Aiden Hutchinson. I shamelessly put that stat out there on Sunday because technically right, but
right.
Hutchinson has more pressures than Josh Allen this year. He's one of only three players who does.
I was going to say, I feel like the biggest argument for Walker right now is just like, who would you have picked over him? Just because, like, I mean, obviously Hutchinson, like, you can come up with a lot of names, but like,
I was going to say, how much time you got?
Like, no one from that draft class is like a JJ Watt or like Miles Garrett or anything. So, like, just the fact that like there's not like a extremely glaring, like, I think Hutchinson should have been first, but like, I don't think it's like outrageously glaring. I'm just saying, like, is the only thing like making it still providing hope.
All right, so from the first round alone, I would have taken Hutch, Derek Stingley, Sauce Gardner, Drake London, Charles Cross,
Tibbs, Wilson,
Chris, not Charles Cross.
I'm saying, what about Tibbs, Thibodeau?
No, his numbers are terrible this year. Okay. Like he has one of the worst win rates in the NFL despite having 13.5 sacks. He's an unblocked sack merchant. Chris Olave, Kyle Hamilton. So that's eight.
First overall. Holy cow, that guy's good.
Yeah. So that's eight by like pick 15. Trent McDuffie, Tyler Smith, Tyler Lindebaum, and George Karlaftis. And that's probably it for the first round. So he's maybe the 15th best player picked in the first round. I'm not going to be gaslit. I refuse.
I'm trying to agree with you that it's bad. I'm just saying it would be like historically bad, and like everyone would be talking about it if like there had been a JJ Watt coming out of that class.
I think it's bad that nobody talks about it.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of the best, most politically correct way the phrase is. Such a irrelevant selection so far that nobody talks about it. Like, has the number one pick been talked about less?
Arrogant would be a pretty good word for that selection too.
Hey, but I know that I'm going to be fed the talking points all offseason that, no, it was a good pick. He's improving. 7 sacks, etc. No, I won't be gaslit. He has improved. I wouldn't say he's an average pass rusher yet, which, again, goes into a lot of like their issues. Like, you look at the last couple draft classes, Trayvon at 1, trading up for Devin Lloyd. Devin Lloyd started off really hot, but since the cast came off, I don't think
– Yeah, right, the, like, back neck roll.
Yeah.
Both injuries. He's got to get nicked up again.
Yeah, so he was playing really well during their winning streak. Since the bye week, he's played really rough. Chad Muma in the third round. Little brother. Luke Fortner in the third round. And then – you know, obviously this draft class, it seemed like their biggest thing was they expected, especially on defense, for a lot of guys to take the next step. And I think Trayvon has taken a step. I think Devin Lloyd has taken a step. They haven't taken these steps. Tyson Campbell hasn't taken a step. Injuries have basically, you know, his year's basically been pointless. Same with Andre Sisco, two guys who they're really hoping would take big steps this year, you know, just haven't. So they were putting all their chips in on all these young guys developing, and it just hasn't happened.
And there's just no one developing behind them either. It's like, even like, again, like, even if you have injuries to like a couple of your best players, and like, even if like players are taking small steps like Devin Lloyd and Trayvon Walker, it's like, what kind of steps like have we seen from like someone like Gregory Jr. or like Luke Fortner even? Like, one of my hot takes I remember from like about a year ago, or probably like really early in the offseason, was that like the day three of the 2023 draft would be like the most important part of the offseason, just because you kind of get the sense that the Jags were going to like sit around and not do anything. And like, nothing's happened from like the day three picks for like the past 5 years from the Jaguars. It's just like from the top and the bottom of the roster, it's just not getting enough out of it.
I honestly think day three has been better for them than day two this year. Like, just like I tried to do a rookie roundup like of each game, and like Anton obviously had a good game. Tank and Strange, you know, basically nothing. Then you move into day three. Ventrell, ridiculous pick to begin with, but he's been on IR all year. Anyways, it's like, in the best case scenario for Ventrell as a pick is that he becomes a starter and plays well. That means that the linebacker you traded up for sucks. Like, that already, like, there's literally no scenario where that's actually a good thing that he plays well. Tyler Lacy played 11 snaps, had a pressure and two run stops. He's honestly been one of their 4 to 5 most impressive rookies, and it has not been an impressive rookie season from him, which, you know, it's easy to really be, goes to say where
there's 13 players in the draft class.
Exactly. Yasir Abdullah, healthy scratch basically all year. Antonio Johnson, some promise, I'd say. Perker Washington, promise-ish for a sixth-round receiver. I'm not ready to jump on the bandwagon like some people. Like, I'm not trying to sound like a hater, but he's another guy who, like, if we rebuild a wide receiver room, is he even in there next year? Like, I think it's like fair to, you know, even ask that. And then Christian Braswell, been hurt all year. Eric Hallett, practice squad all year. Cooper Hodges, injured reserve. Raymond Vahosik, not on any roster, let alone the Jaguars roster. Derek Parrish, the second worst player I've ever seen on the Jaguars practice field after Timmy Tebow. And then, you know, Elijah Cook's undrafted free agent. I'm with you. You know, you needed a day three to stand out more. And I think Lacy has promise. I think Antonio has promise. I think Parker has some promise. Abdullah has some promise, but just not getting really anything from that group like that you need to get, you know, like,
yeah.
I just don't subscribe to the idea of that good teams can't have rookies make impacts. I mean, look at the Lions. The Lions had just as good of a year as the Jaguars had a year ago. And they're being,
yeah.
Jack Campbell was an absolutely horrific pick, but otherwise, their rookie class is doing fantastic.
And they drafted a running back and tight end earlier than the Jags, but they like did it correctly.
Picked
and,
the right ones.
Yeah, like they did like the contrarian thing, like the same thing as Bakke, where it's like they take a tight end, a running back, and a linebacker all earlier than like most people would suggest or want. And then like
the difference was they actually needed a tight end.
That too. I've always wondered what the Strange pick means for Engram's future, even with the contract extension. Just because going back to the like Philly days, like Goddard seems like such a clear like heir to the throne for like when Ertz was going to leave, because Ertz was a lot older. And so like, I don't know, like Engram was signed to an extension, but I almost feel like the extension was like had to be made because they didn't do anything else. Like, imagine if they went into this season like without having locked up a long-term deal with Evan Engram. That would be
absurd. I know his future role, but it sounds insane to say out loud for a second-round pick.
The what now?
I know his future role, but it's an insane thing to say out loud for a second-round pick. He's the Luke Farrell replacement. He's the long-term Luke Farrell replacement.
Yeah. They should have just signed Mercedes Lewis. Could have been easy peasy.
Brother, you got Mark Long over here. So Is there anything defense can do to pick things back up, you think? Or is it they're just so broken at the seams? Because it's the same guys that were playing well in the first half of the season. That to me is what's confusing. It's the same guys. It's not like they're being derailed by injuries. They had their entire defensive depth chart, other than Christian Braswell, who hasn't played all year, healthy for this game. And they got taken to the woodshed. Like, Tampa's even kind of running the ball. Mm-hmm. And everybody knows Tampa can't run the ball.
Yeah, like guys like the two starting linebackers, and then like Darius Williams, I feel like is like not really impressed as much in the past month. Like it is so weird how like they were such a good tackling team to start the season, and that's just like completely gone away. It's like, and again, it's like at every level too. It's not like, again, like there's been injuries to the secondary, but it's not like it's been like only the secondary, and you can like really point to just that. It's just like all over the place. It seems like a mess. And so it doesn't, like, they've got a pretty good get right opportunity this week against another pretty bad number one overall pick. But like, yeah, it's tough to imagine like how they can kind of like bounce back from that performance the rest of the year.
I'll also say this, their entire defensive line, Fadakasi, Hamilton, Robson Harris on big contracts. Two first-round picks on the edge, a big-money linebacker and a first-round pick at inside linebacker, a big-money safety and a big-money corner, and then two early day-three picks rounding out the secondary. They have poured a ton of resources into this defense. And while it flashed and looked very good at the start of the year, it has completely fallen apart. And I think, again, a big part of that is talent and – I think there's one guy you can point the finger at, personally.
The Jaguars rank second in number of cap dollars spent this season on defense, behind only the Steelers.
And I'd argue the Steelers are getting more bang for their buck. Because that's like Minka and TJ Watt. And
yeah, plus they gave outside Smith a pretty good deal.
Yeah.
They've still got Hayward roaming around. Yeah.
Yeah, so and I think you can say they missed on extending or paying all three of those interior defensive linemen. Maybe you can excuse Devon because of his situation. So, okay, you missed on two of the three that you paid. Maybe miss isn't the right word for Trayvon, but you didn't amplify your resources at all, in my opinion. I think in terms of the money that you paid for the safety in the corner, I'm not sure you're getting much bang for your buck there. And then your other corner and your safety have been injured all year, and that's kind of made you have to use some of your depth. And, oh, look, the depth isn't very good either.
I'm pretty curious to see, like, what the mindset is for the front office in the upcoming season. Like, whether there's – like, basically, like, how much urgency there is, especially relative to last offseason when there was zero urgency. But, like, how much they're going to be, like, hard-pressed to, like, spend a lot of money this upcoming year, even if it means that, like, they'll be in tough spots down the road. Because, like, I feel like that was, like, would probably be, like, their big excuse for not spending a lot this offseason is, like, oh, we don't want to, like, turn out, like, how the Saints turned out and just have, like, a ridiculous amount of, like, dead money pushed to the future. And, like, that's, like, a fair factor to like not go crazy during the 2023 offseason, but like it's not really an excuse to again like just sit back and do nothing. And so
yeah,
I wonder if like after sitting back and doing nothing, if they're gonna like go full throttle or not.
And that's my retort, is I don't think that they should have gone crazy spending this offseason, this last one. Yeah. But I think they should have kept Arden Key. Don't let him leave the building. When you do let him leave the building, replace him with somebody. Like, you had Jadeveon Clowney literally in your facilities.
Yeah.
He's having a fantastic season for Baltimore right now. And then don't just waste day two of the draft. Like that their day two is absolutely nightmarish right now. You're basically saying we don't need to spend a pick in the second and third round. And no, that's not true. Like, they very much needed to do that. So I think there are very clear ways for them to improve the defense without spending money this offseason. And to your point, I'm terrified to see what their sense of urgency is for this offseason. Because I don't know, maybe this is just me, but I'd imagine as much as I'm pointing fingers at the front office, maybe the front office is saying, you know, why aren't players, you know, doing this? Like, oh, it's not our fault. Trevor keeps on interception and people keep fumbling, et cetera, et cetera. That's not me reporting anything. I'm just saying that's how I'd imagine most NFL front offices would talk.
Yeah. No, I don't know. That would be like the most interesting thing in the world, to be like a fly on the wall in those situations. But
true that. All right. You got anything else on defense, my friend?
No, I don't think so. RIP the Mike Caldwell hype. Maybe we'll see you again next year.
It was a pleasure playing with you, and it's just me and you playing violins as the Titanic goes down.
All right, I got one question for you, actually. Okay. The Jags returned all 11 defensive starters from last year, right? Would you say over or under they return 9 starters going into 2024? So, like, you think it's going to be
– Give me 8.5 or 9.5. I don't
– Okay, are they going to lose more than 3 starters or less than 3? More than 3.5 starters or less than 3.5 starters? Yeah. They're going to lose 2 starters, I think.
Fadakas and Jenkins, I think, will be shown the door.
Yeah. I was just trying to figure out, like, if they were going to be, like, so much into a sense of urgency that they, like, cut, like, the big extensions that they just did, like, just to get new faces in the building. But, like, it really shouldn't. It'd be nice to, like, see that level of urgency, but then at that point, like, you probably are going, like, too over the edge and too far into, like, Saints, yeah, make-believe type world.
Yeah, so I'd imagine Fadakas and Jenkins won't be there next year. And then otherwise, like, Devon, I feel like we'll get him all again because this year really isn't his fault. You know, like, it's not like he's one of the other two interior defense linemen who just hasn't played well because he just maybe –
Probably same for Tyson, right? Would you say Tyson's in a similar boat? Yeah.
I don't think Tyson's as bad as he's playing right now. I think this is just a wasted year for him. Same for Cisco. Darius Williams, I mean, you probably save some money if you walk away from him, because I'm not sure how badly you want to open a hole at corner.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any chance to get rid of Foye because he's not worth, I think, what he'll be making next year. But just in terms of, like, how much he does for the defense off the field, I don't imagine they'd let him walk. Yeah, Devin Lloyd.
A bigger hole.
Yeah. As long as people are being bulky ball, Devin Lloyd will still be in that role. I'm not going to give up on him. Trayvon's not going anywhere, obviously. Josh Allen, I think, will be the Evan Engram of this offseason, where he's set to be a free agent, but he won't ever actually spend a day as a free agent. And, yeah, so I – 2, maybe 3. I think the big things you need to change are, like, the depth. Like, you need to rebuild the depth of the interior line, like, replace Ledbetter and Blackson and obviously Fadakasi, and you need to rebuild the edge depth because Chase on and Smoot just aren't delivering.
Yeah, and then you're going to need a starting safety. I'm interested to see, like, how many resources they kind of put into that, because – I feel like safety is kind of like a underpaid or like under resourced whatever position, which is, like, fair because it's, like, not as important as quarterback and other positions and stuff. It's probably closer to the bottom of the spectrum. But, like, good safeties can have a really big impact. And I feel like linebacker is kind of like the key position in a Mike Caldwell defense, probably, as well as defensive line. But then, like, I feel like the safeties are probably more important in the corners in Mike Caldwell's scheme. Might be a hot take, but I'm interested to see if they, like, go after, like, a really good safety, or if they're just going to sit back and be like, Antonio Johnson, let's see what you got.
That's my take. I think Antonio Johnson is that guy. I think they're going to enter the offseason with him as the presumed starter. And then what do you do at nickel? I'd say still, honestly, Trey Hardin.
Yeah, he's been, like, one of the best or most consistent players this season.
That's another thing I won't be gaslit on. People keep tweeting at me saying, you told us Antonio Johnson wasn't a nickel. They are rotating him out on obvious passing downs for Trey Herndon. He's literally a run specialist in the slot. He is not a nickel. Leave me alone. Leave me the hell alone. Sorry, I had to get that off my chest. Somebody, like, asked me, like, why does Herndon keep rotating in there? Like, do you want Antonio Johnson cover Chris Godwin? Like, is that what you want to see? Like,
yeah, of all things to be gassed about, that should not be one of them.
Yeah. So, all right, we're going to break real quick, and then we'll be back for Gus's favorite segment. Here we go, Gus.
Oh, boy.
Get out the trophy case, baby.
Oh, God. I'm not going to be
bold. You ready? Game ball. 30-12 loss. Absolutely unwatchable game. 30-0 in the third quarter. Game ball. Go.
All right. Starting off with offense, going with Elijah Cooks. First career reception.
I'm not going to make fun of you this time.
He had the most efficient day by pretty much any Jaguars player, but especially any pass catcher. Again, like three catches on three targets, I believe, for 40-something yards on 9 routes run. So I thought like Parker Washington was going to need to step up this game, and then ended up being Elijah Cooks. And so he gets my game ball.
He had the best yards per route ran of any Jaguars receiver in a game this year, other than Christian Kirk, 26 yards per route against the Cincinnati Bengals. We're not going to count that one.
What a stat.
Oh, here we go. Somebody tweeted at me, Christian Kirk is showing he's the MVP of this offense simply by not being present. I said, this is just Gus Logue explaining his game balls to me every week.
Yep. He showed up. Here's an award. These are basically just participation trophies for me.
Okay, my offense, I'm going with Calvin Ridley. I don't care what the score was. That play he made on his first touchdown, like that acceleration on the broken route, was terrific. I thought he had a fine game. Like people love to complain about him. I thought Calvin had a good game.
The acceleration was nice. Him holding onto the ball with the con, like he had a pretty big hit.
He got destroyed, dude.
Yeah, so I mean, he should hold onto the ball, but good job holding onto the ball. And then the second touchdown, too, I thought was impressive. Like, I feel like that was the only fade route from, like, a wide alignment by receiver that's been successful this season. And so, like, it kind of sucks that Lawrence didn't throw it, but it was still cool to see it really win on just, like, one of those end zone back shoulder fades. As inefficient as it was, like, or as they are in general, like, it was just cool to see because, I don't know, it was a touchdown and it was late in the game. So,
yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. Defense, we can't give it to anybody but Josh Allen. Actually, I'll take that back. You can go ahead and give yours to Josh Allen.
Okay.
You said worst, had one of his worst games of the year.
Yeah, and I think I don't know who had, like, the other pressure and quarterback hit, but Allen definitely had, like, most of the production. And, like, just by the stats and the numbers, he was pretty clearly the best player on the Jags defense.
Yeah.
But who do you have?
Real quick, what kind of game? Yeah, Wirfs had 4 pressures allowed, tied for the most pressures he's allowed in a game this year.
And then he had 2 hits allowed, which is tied for the most allowed this year. But I know Allen only had one of those hits. I forget who the other. Anyway, Allen had, like, the best day, I thought.
Adam Gotsis. He solid in the run game. Had a big pass deflection on the first drive, which I think you pointed out. It was probably a touchdown if he doesn't get his paws up. So
yeah
that's. It feels like a very dude. He had 3 pass deflections. What the hell?
I don't remember the one. I know he had, like, a couple pressures too.
I remember another one later in the game, but I didn't know he had 3. That's funny as hell. Yeah, so Adam Gossis.
He was, like, the only other player I even, like, thought about before just going with Josh Allen. So I think that's
Adam Gossis and Trey Herndon combined for 5 pass breakups. The other dozen or so players who play defense combined for zip. Trey Herndon and Adam Gossis, the glue guys. Those are the two most, like, glue guys that a glue guy can be too. They keep surviving every team, every staff. They keep knock them down. They keep coming back the hell up. Good for them, man. They're going to be here in 2030. They're going to be starting for God. Who's a young up and comer like Deuce Gruden when he's head coach for the.
Oh. Okay.
No. All right. Special teams game ball. I'm ready to balky ball you. Do you have one for me?
Yeah, this one's tough. So, okay, let's by process of elimination, it can't be McManus because he missed another kick. So that leaves me with Logan Cook and Jamal Agnew, I feel like, because they are the only ones that like really affect the ball or special teams a lot. And off the top of my head, the only player I remember from either of them making is Jamal Agnew, who had a decent return on the first kickoff. So my game ball is going to Jamal Agnew on this one.
Logan Cook had a 65-yard punt. Get ball.
Man, I knew whoever I chose was gonna be the wrong one. I knew
No, just that one was the wrong one. just that one, my friend. Just that one. All right. You have any hot takes after what we saw? I want to hear.
Yeah, speaking of glue guys, I think Cam Robinson is kind of the glue guy for the offense. The Jags are 6-2 with when he plays and starts a game, and they're 1-6 without him. And they have, like, off the top of my head, I think it was a plus 34 point differential with him, and then without him, it's minus 43. So he's been a pretty big deal, and I think, like, I kind of almost forgot about him until Doug's press conference today, but he said that he's expecting Cam to be activated from like the 21-day practice period off of injury reserve, and he thinks he's going to practice tomorrow, which I would assume gives him a pretty good chance to play on Sunday. I also thought it was interesting. I think – tell me if I read this wrong, but I think Doug was saying that Ezra Cleveland is probably going to start at left guard, and then Walker Little will be the swing tackle if Cam does return to be left tackle on Sunday.
Yeah, no, I'd say that is absolutely like the most likely path. Just Walker just isn't a natural guard. You know, he's a tackle. And they're not going to play him. Like, if they have him and Cam Robinson both available, they're always, it seems like, at least this year, going to play Cam Robinson. And Anton is, like I said, their best and most consistent lineman right now. Which is funny to say because he cannot run block at all, but I keep tweeting out how good he is as a pass blocker, and I keep getting replies like, oh, Kenny, how's his run block? And I'll hang up and listen. It's bad, okay? It's bad. Would you feel better, though, if I said the rookie right tackle was a good run blocker or a bad pass blocker? I don't think so. I think you'd much rather him be good at pass blocking as a rookie, right?
Especially when you have a franchise quarterback on your team, but even if like they still had Minshew, like you'd still rather be like your tackle be a better pass protector.
Yeah, so I expect that to be the line. I've had some people ask me if Anton has any left tackle potential, and it's no. Like he was viewed as a right tackle early on in the process for a reason, and he had like some right tackle traits at Oklahoma, like just the way he like plays and what he's comfortable with. So even though he played left tackle for Oklahoma, he graded out and I believe projects better as a right tackle. So I wouldn't even think about moving. You have your right tackle for the next 3 years on a rookie contract. That's, you know, just be happy with that is what I think.
Yeah. So, takes. Just to put it like pen on paper or whatever, my hot take was going to be that, Cam wouldn't allow any pressures to Brian Burns, but Burns lines up on the other side way more often, especially after the Panthers bye. He's been like exclusively left outside linebacker, so going to be lining up across from right tackle Anton Harrison a lot on Sunday. So instead, I'll say Cam Robinson is going to have a big pancake on a ETN touchdown off a screen.
How many pressures will Anton allow to Brian Burns?
I'm going to say one.
That's a good game.
Yeah. No, I feel like the Panthers defense has been like kind of like outplayed themselves this year because I don't know how to pronounce their defensive coordinator's name, but he's a really good coach. And Burns is like, it's like not the way that the Jaguars are where like Josh Allen is one man show. Like Burns is definitely the best defender on that defense, but he doesn't like do it completely by himself.
My hot take is, and the way to fix the Jaguars is, strip Press Taylor of play calling in the offseason. You don't have to – I don't think Doug's ever going to fire him. The heels are so dug in on that situation that he's literally, like, implanted like a statue in the ground. So Doug take back play calling duties, replace the general manager, in my opinion, and go and find in the draft and free agency an interior offensive lineman, two rotational interior defensive linemen, and a pass rusher. And there you go. Jaguars are fixed. You're welcome. I'll any big wigs out there listening, you can come to me for consultation services. I've been tweeting out the ways to fix the Jaguars for years now. So
yeah, I don't disagree with any of that. I think like definitely in terms of like player positions to bring in, like you got to focus on the trenches on both sides of the ball. And I think like the only thing I would add to that is that like the center position needs to change. Like it's been 2 years. Like I've seen enough. You got to move on. Like,
it 2 years should be long enough for you to be able to move on from a third round pick.
Yeah, and that's what I was gonna say. Like it's a third round pick. Like maybe if it was Tyler Linderbaum and he drafted him in the 20s, and like then you're like, okay, like he was like this great prospect. Maybe he'll turn it around.
I think it was like Billy Price with the Bengals was like a similar like situation. Like I think Frank Ragnow, like the Bengals are trying to pick Ragnow and he went a couple picks before them. So they like panicked and took the next center, Billy Price. And he was absolutely horrific, but they kept trotting him out there like year after year because you put a first round pick into him. I agree. It's a third round pick. You should be able to go into year three, you know, like you're not wearing that much egg on your face, you know, if you replace him. But again, it goes to my general manager point. Like, pick better players. Fine, bye.
Yeah. So. All right.
Gus, you got anything else for us, my friend?
No. That was a good little therapy session. Excited to see you again on Friday.
Excited to do it again on Friday.
You hear the excitement in my voice? The best thing that happened, my favorite story from Christmas is that my girlfriend's cousin was like opening a present and it was like a nice hoodie and he said, "Oh, I like this hoodie." And he like the way he said it, you knew that he like genuinely liked it, but he said it in just like such a dull tone that like we kept making fun of it the end of the night, like, "Oh, I like this gift." So that's how I feel about like coming back to talk about the Jaguars again on Fridays. I'm excited to see you on Friday, John.
Did you get my gift?
I did not. It hasn't come in the mail.
Nah, you'll get it.
Is it one of these?
No. It's a Trevor Etienne Gators jersey. Oh. It's your guy.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Like, come on. You know I don't care enough about the Gators to, like, put up any kind of fight.
No. You are, like, the embodiment of all Gators fans. Like, just in, like, one human vessel for me. And I just have to give every take I have against all of them and use it on you because you're the only like thing I have around me. It's like I get it.
I just don't care. We're gonna have to like come up with some kind of bet for next year though, since the Gators and the Knights play. We'll have to do something for that. Then Eagles
play.
Those will get hurt.
Play. They'll be on a football field, but
I don't know. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, UCF's epic collapse against known powerhouse Georgia Tech left me reeling.
Gus.
That's me when you're not on the podcast. All right. With that said, thank you guys for joining us. Episode 81. Who would have thought? John Shipley, Gus Logue, we got balky bald. We pumped out on chess. I definitely have a lot of takes out there that if somebody wants to be a jackass, they can go ahead and dunk on me for specifically my reactions to George Pickens. And then in the training camp, and I said Tank was having a good camp, which he was. Fine by. Wasn't he? Am I crazy for that?
Much of it was before pads, and then pads came on, and people were like, yeah, he's like still doing well. But it like most of the hype, I feel like, was like before pads, and it was just like, oh, this kid looks athletic. Wow.
Yeah. That's when your guys shine. Four pads, come on. Who's your guy, I guess?
I was about to say your guy. The guy.
You need a guy. Like I'll say right now, Trey Herndon is one of my like I'm a big Trey Herndon fan.
Right.
Who's your guy?
I don't know, because like the guy I always like stand at the most for is the quarterback, because like that's the position I like the most. Yeah. And like
doesn't
I know,
count.
But, like I know like that doesn't count because it needs to be like
Cam Robinson.
Blue guy. Yeah.
Cam Robinson's your guy.
All right. That's not a bad one.
Okay. So for every pressure Cam Robinson gets, I'm going to make your life hell. Deal?
I guess. I'm going to see if I can get a little bit better. I can't think of one off the top of my head.
Ezra Cleveland's your guy.
No.
Just real quick. He's been bad, right?
Cisco's my guy. I've always liked Cisco.
I can do that.
I can have one guy on each side, maybe. Cisco and Cam. So, double the opportunity to make fun of me.
So since this is the podcast for me to say Trent Baalke's been done a bad job this year, Ezra Cleveland, like, he hasn't been good, right? He's been bad, right?
I thought he was bad when the trade first happened, and then I like dug into some film and I thought, oh, this is actually like pretty solid, but I think there's like a pretty big difference in Press Taylor's scheme and Kevin O'Connell's scheme. Like, Kevin O'Connell was a really good offensive play caller and coach, and I think that like might have had like a little bit of an impact on like the three games that I watched. And so yeah, like, he hasn't been barched, but he certainly hasn't been like excellent.
He has two games in the four-game losing streak where he's given up six or more pressures, which is insane for a guard. He gave up six pressures against the Bengals and then seven pressures on Sunday.
Seven pressures?
For a guard!
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Him and Walker Little combined for 12. So that's just 12 pressures along the left side.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Trading for a guard instead of a pass rusher, I think, is another ding against your guy.
It's funny because, like, Doug was asked today about, like, whether he thought the offensive line was good enough going into the season. And he's like, we did have to trade for Ezra Cleveland. But, yeah, no, I thought the whole time we were okay.
Did you see his face when somebody started to ask the question about Trevor's comments about not practicing? He wanted to laugh at me.
I did not see his face because I literally put my hands over my own face and like
I don't remember his exact wording. He's basically like, "Well, I get why he said that. He doesn't practice."
Yeah, he kind of like laughed it off and gave a good answer. But yeah, I was cringing a little bit.
Yeah. So, well, that's the thing. It's hard for you to just make that comment if you're literally not practicing, but also, it does look like they don't practice. And Doug was like, "You guys are out there. You see how we practice." I'm like, "Yeah, I know that you literally practice. Like, I'm not saying you're not holding practice."
I was going to ask you about that. Like, I've only been to a handful of practices this year. And, like, granted, whenever media goes to practice, it's, like, at the beginning of practice before things really ramp up. But, like,
nothing.
I've never gone out there and be like, "Wow, these guys, like, really compete super hard." Like, I've never, like, come away with anything.
We get out there for stretches and individual, like, the start of Indy, which is just special teams. So you get out there for stretches, and then you get out there for the quarterbacks throwing a ball through a net. And that's about the extent of it. So we are out there. I'll concede that. We do. I'll concede this. The Jaguars do hold practices. So point taken.
Is it though?
You got anything else for us?
No.
All right. On that note, thank you guys again for joining us. Hope all of you guys had a Merry Christmas. Like I said last week, we appreciate every single one of you guys who likes, listens, subscribes. All of you guys who leave a comment every single time Gus says good morning. Oh, Gus, that reminds me. I want to pull up a comment.
Okay.
I want to pull up a comment before we
go. I haven't been monitoring too closely.
Oh, I watch it like a hawk.
I know that that's like part of in your unwritten job description. It's just something you're gonna do anyway.
So I got a haircut like a couple episodes ago. Somebody commented and said, "John has nice hair." Here we go. You ready?
Yeah.
Since Gus isn't here, I'll give a Gus style take. On Tuesday at 3 a.m. in 2025, Tyson Campbell eat a bagel with no seasoning.
Oh, that's good.
They love it.
That's funny.
They love it. You know,
I just got Baalke balled again.
You did. Baalke balled in the comment section. What a life. What a life.
Touche. That was a really good one. That was good.
Yeah. Well, we'll end on that happy note. Thank you guys again for listening.
My last thing. Cam Robinson is going to have a pancake on a Travis Etienne touchdown, and it'll be in the second quarter with 6 minutes left.
I know you're joking. That's literally what some of your hot takes sound like. I swear to God, that is what some of them sound like.
It's I'm blaming it on you because, like, you say I have to work on my takesmanship, and then, like, that makes me think that, like, if I'm – and I guess it's more my fault, but I'm like, oh, if I'm more specific, that'll make it hotter.
See, that's the thing. It's not specificity.
Specificity?
Yeah, okay, there you go. I went to OT. Don't be mean to me.
Right,
It's not that. It's – you got to turn up the heat. You know, give me something I can sink my teeth into.
Yeah, I did say that he was going to have a good game against Brian Burns, but then I had to kind of watch that one.
No, I like that one. That was a solid one. That was a solid one. Okay, so
I'll get back in the lab, John. We'll see what I can come up with on Friday.
Yeah, we'll see. Oh, I will do my best to deliver some Bryce Young ones on Friday. Like I said, I'm completely expecting Bryce Young to embarrass them specifically because of me. So it's good stuff. But thank you guys for listening. We'll be back on Friday to preview Jaguars-Panthers. Until then, this is the Jaguar Report Podcast. You've all been Balky Bold.